Hare Krishna. We welcome you to Sri Radha Gopinath Temple. First of all, I'd like to apologize. There are limitless reasons for me to apologize. First of all, in the presence of such exalted souls, God brothers, God sisters, great devotees, for me to be speaking, I apologize. Second of all, I apologize if I start sneezing because I'm allergic to flowers. Let us see how Krishna protects me. It is said that tapasya, tapo divyam putrakayena satyam, is the festival for the heart of devotees. So this flower festival is a special festival for me. I'm supposed to speak this evening at around 6:30, so I'll tell the story then. I was supposed to give Srimad Bhagavatam class this morning, but because all of you are plucking flower petals, there is no space to bring the verse in. So now there's no verse. So I just have to speak something. Hare Krishna. In Krishna consciousness or bhakti, everything has a deep and profound meaning when we understand it in relation to Krishna, to the supreme source of everything that exists. In the 10th chapter of Gita, Krishna tells, Aham sarvasya prabhavo matta sarvam pravartate iti matva bhajanti mam bhuta bhava samanvitaha. I am the source of all spiritual and all material worlds. Everything emanates from me. The wise who know this perfectly engage in my loving service and worship me with all their hearts. The Vedanta or Brahma Sutra, which is the essence of all the knowledge of all the scriptures of all the Vedas, and the great acharyas of the various sampradayas all accept this. And it begins, the first aphorism, janmadyasa yataha, that this, the highest truth, the supreme truth, is the source of everything that exists. This idea is revealed in all the great spiritual traditions throughout history. Some call this supreme truth Brahman, Parabrahman, God, Allah, Jehovah, Yahweh, Ram, Krishna. But it is that one supreme truth that is the source of everything. Ishopanishad, the invocation, Om Purnam Adha Purnam Idam. That this absolute supreme truth, who is the cause of all causes, the source of everything, is perfect and complete. And therefore, everything that is emanating from that supreme truth, which is everything and everyone that exists, is also perfect and complete. The idea of imperfection, incompleteness, which is the cause of suffering, anxiety, which manifests as selfishness and egoism, greed, lust, envy, anger. All of these things are due to not being in connection with that truth. But how could anything be disconnected from that truth? If everything is in existence forever is connected, where is the disconnection? There actually is no disconnection. But due to the infinitesimal nature of the jiva or the soul, because we have the free will, swarat, the independent free will, we can choose to recognize it or not recognize it. And when we choose not to recognize it, then we turn away from the bright sun of Krishna's beauty, love, and sweetness, and we look into a shadow of darkness. Mayadhyakshena prakriti suyate sacharacharam. Krishna tells, even the shadow is working under my direction. But when we look into that darkness, we come under the influence of the ahankar, the false ego. And instead of wanting to be the loving servant, we want to be the enjoyer, the proprietor, and the controller. And in that state, all other illusions manifest. We think we're this body, we think we're the designations of this body. And then we start believing that this is mine and this is yours. And all these material dualities, they all emanate from this misconception. The dualities of pleasure and pain, honor and dishonor, happiness and distress, success and failure, health, disease. All of these, victory, defeat, birth, death, we become very much affected by these because of our forgetfulness of who we really are. And how Sarvaloka Maheshwaram, everything is the property of the supreme object of our eternal love. So in this sense, the sense of everything coming from the same source, comes the idea of Advaita, that we are all one with God. But at the same time, in that oneness is limitless variety. And those, and it is in that variety that rasa or love is exchanged eternally in this spiritual world. Srila Prabhupada gave an example of flowers. I think all of you are meditating on flowers today. So each and every one of you is plucking a flower. But in different groups I'm seeing, some are white and some are red and some are yellow and some are blue and some are green and some are purple. And each one has a very unique fragrance. So the variety of all the flowers gives a very, very special happiness to the heart. And tonight you will see when we were showering flowers on Radha Gopinath, every time there's a change of color of flowers, everyone ecstatically cheers. If it was all just white flowers, everyone would be happy. And the white flowers are pouring and pouring and pouring, and everyone's singing and everyone's so happy. And then come red rose flowers from Vrindavan, and everyone goes, Hari Bol. And the kirtan rises in ecstatic. And then there's more and more of these fragrant rose flowers from Vrindavan Dham, and they're spreading the whole room. And then suddenly there's another yellow flowers from Govardhan Eco Village. And everyone screams even louder. It's not a competition of which flower's better. That we have to understand. It's not that this flower's better than that flower. It's that the variety of all these different flowers is what makes a flower festival. But they're all flower. So similarly, we are all Brahman. We are all spiritual. Mamayavam so jivaloke. We are all part of God. In that sense, we are none different than God. But achintya beda beda tattva. The liberated state of total peace is to understand that oneness. But all the great Vaishnava acharyas throughout history have taught that within that oneness is limitless variety. And in that variety are limitless eternal opportunities of loving exchange. As a sun ray is one with the sun in quality, emitting heat and light, still, the sun ray is never the source of the sun. The sun is the source of the sun ray. And a sun ray is not the cause of every other sun ray's light, but the sun is. So similarly, Param Brahman, Param Brahma, Param Dhamma, Pavitram Itam Uttamam. That the Supreme Brahman is the source of all Brahman. Nityo Nityanam, Chaitanas Chaitananam, Eku Bahunam Yovididati Kaman. The Upanishads teach there is one Supreme Brahman, and from that one Supreme Brahman there are limitless Brahmans. But all those limitless Brahmans are always subordinate to the one Supreme Brahman. And now we come to just the beginning of the understanding of what bhakti is, what prema is. That Supreme Brahman, who is all beautiful, who is all attractive, Bhagavad Gita Krishna tells all the beautiful, magnificent, wonderful, incredible things in the entire creation, they are all just a spark of my splendor. So we know how much love can intoxicate and obsess people in this world, an attraction to various beautiful things or beautiful people. They may be mothers or fathers or girlfriends or boyfriends or husbands or wives or palaces or cars. We're attracted to so many things in this world. Bollywood movies or Hollywood movies. So many things attract us. Money. And how people are willing to work so hard, even give their lives in obsession with these things. But Krishna tells that whatever attraction, they may be reflected attractions or they may be direct attractions, they're all but a spark, not even a portion of a ray, of one single ray from the limitless sun. So how attractive is Krishna? How all-inclusive, supreme, and ever-expanding is God's love? how to connect with that love, comes a deep secret. That supreme source of everything, by his own sweet will, is controlled by the love of any one of his devotees. We understand the concept of Radha Krishna, the Shaktiman, the masculine and feminine aspects of the One Supreme. Sri Radha is the Ashraya. She's the abode of all love. And Gopinath is the Vishaya, the ultimate object of all love. So between the two is love. Love means a lover and a beloved. And in that is the all-pervading, complete source of everything that exists, which is that love. In the bhakti tradition, it is that love that is ultimately the source of everything that exists. Maya is when we forget that by our free will. But once we forget, we become very much entangled in a very difficult network of complexities. But Krishna is so merciful. That one supreme truth, paritranaya sadunam vinashaya chaduskritam dharma samstapanaradaya sambhavami juge juge, comes to this world again and again and again just to remind us and to give us the path back home to our true nature. And all the great spiritual traditions, religions of the world, their essence is that one supreme being has come to remind us of who we are and what our purpose, our true purpose is, to purify our hearts. Cheto darpanam arjanam bhava mahadavagni nirvapanam. When the water falls from the cloud, it's pure, it's transparent. But when it comes in contact with the ground, it loses its transparency, it becomes muddy. Mud is never the nature of water. Muddy water means something is mixed in it. But if you filter the water, you don't change the water. You just take out what is not water from the water. So yoga, dharma, the spiritual process, especially chanting God's holy names, is a process of just filtering our consciousness and restoring its original quality, removing the mud of the ahankar, the false ego, of all our misconceptions and misidentifications. In one sense, it's the easiest thing, because spiritual perfection is as easy as just being yourself. Is anything easier than that? Just being yourself? But it's also very difficult, because since times that cannot even be traced, we forgot who we are. And we're thinking, I'm a man, or I'm a woman, or my skin is white or brown or black or red or yellow, or I'm a Hindu or a Jew or a Jain or a Sikh or a Parsi or a Muslim or a Buddhist or a agnostic or an atheist, or we're thinking I'm a human or a dog or a cat or a cow or an elephant or a flower. We're all identifying with these things. Or I'm American, or I'm Russian, or I'm Indian, or I'm Pakistani, or I'm Iranian, or I'm
Whatever we're thinking we are, we're all fighting over, this is mine. And we're so absorbed in this conflicts over these janasya mohoya mahama meti, I and mine, that we just don't know how to be ourself. Najayate mriyate vakadachit. I'm an eternal soul. I'm the living force. I'm Satchidananda. I'm eternal. I'm full of knowledge. I'm full of bliss. My own true self is seeing through my eyes and tasting through my tongue and smelling through our nose and sneezing through my body. But I am the witness. I am the living force. And Lord Chaitanya, he established the identity of the living force as the very premise of his whole philosophy. Jivira Swarupoi Krishnera Nityadas. We're all eternally servants of Krishna, of God. Nityasiddha Krishna Prema Sajja Kabunai. And love for Krishna is who we are. Love for God is what we are forever. Anandam buddhivardhanam. We're all seeking that love. Anandamayopyasad. And Krishna descends to this world, sends us holy literature, sends us holy people just to remind us where to find that love we're seeking. In awakening, our own true selves. Hare Krishna. I hope that woke you up. Because that's the purpose of life, is to wake up. This is what happens when they don't give me a verse to speak on. I just start speaking. So this flower festival is about celebrating how we are all connected through our love for God. How Krishna is subordinate to the love of his devotee. How Krishna is conquered by the love of a devotee. And we were speaking about Radha Krishna because Sri Radha's love in Ramayana, Sita's love in Vaikuntha, Lakshmi's love, they're the same person, the same tattva or truth. That love is the cause of all love, the source of all love. And because within our hearts we are part of Krishna, therefore within the souls there's a little particle of Radha's love. And that little particle within the soul of all living beings, when it's awakened, has the power of conquering Krishna. So what is the full, whole of all love? Sri Radha's love. That is why in Vrindavan, people say, Jai Sri Radhe. Celebrating that supreme love. And in the Maha Mantra, we say, Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
Hare is Sri Radha, the reservoir of all love. And Krishna is the reservoir of all pleasure. Rama, the reservoir of all attraction. So it is reconnecting to our own true souls and awakening that love that is the object and goal of bhakti. And the process in which that is done is called bhakti yoga. And the beautiful thing, my beloved Guru Maharaj Srila Prabhupada would say, that the path and the goal of the path, the sadhana and the sadhya, are the same. One time Srila Prabhupada was asked, I think it was a reporter who asked, what do you hope to get from this chanting of Hare Krishna? They were expecting, you know, some powers, some wealth, some liberation, some attainment of spiritual goals. What do you hope to get by chanting Hare Krishna? And Prabhupada, with all conviction and very deep humility, he responded, the goal of chanting Hare Krishna is chanting Hare Krishna. Golokera Premadana Harinam Sankirtana. This beautiful names of the Lord have descended from the spiritual realm. Now we're chanting Hare Krishna because the name of Krishna is non-different than Krishna, therefore it's pavitra, it's pure. By remembering Krishna, by remembering the names of the Lord, Nam Nam Akari Bahuta Nija Sarabhashaktis, when the Lord is so magnanimous, has so many names, by sincerely chanting these names, we become purified. And in the purified state, then we chant in pure ecstatic love. And in that ecstatic love, we want to chant forever and ever and ever. Rupa Goswami gives a glimpse into what's in store for us if we just carry on sincerely. May I say? Rupa Goswami says, when I chant the two syllables Krishna, I wish to have many, 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 many tongues to taste the sweetness of that name. And when that name enters into my ears, I desire tens and millions of ears to hear it more and more. It's like nectar. And when it enters into my heart, it conquers my very life, and I become completely surrendered in ecstasy to those two syllables. That is love. So some of us, when we're chanting, we're just trying to stay awake. I'm not going to ask if anyone has ever had that experience. That means we're still in the state of purifying ourselves. But if we carry on chanting and we carry on doing seva, serving, because that puts us in the proper frame of mind by which we can approach the name of the Lord with the right attitude, seva. But through seva, seva to great souls, Gopi Bhartur Padakamalayora Dasa Dasa Das Anudas. Lord Chaitanya was God. He was Krishna, who has descended into this world as prophesied in the Vedas thousands of years before, and who revealed his opulences and excellences in this way. And he was also, from a social perspective, he was a sannyasi, which in those days, sannyasis were actually respected by people. And he was a Brahmin, but a true Brahmin. So everything about him was respectable. He was Nimai Pandit. He was the greatest scholar in the world. But he taught us that he did not identify with any of these things. He performed the duties. We have to perform our duties, whether we're husbands or wives or sons or daughters, or whether we're politicians or farmers, or whether we're monks, or whether we're whatever our particular software engineers, musicians, whatever our occupation, there's a particular duty where we apply moral, ethical, principles and perform all these duties, some siddhirhari doshana, to please Krishna, in the service of Krishna. But whatever our duties, whatever our roles, whatever our responsibilities, Lord Chaitanya taught, we only identify as being the servant of the servant of the servant of the servant, a very small little servant of the Lord. And when he chanted this verse, it was just after witnessing a king named Prataparudra. And this king, he was so powerful that so many invaders tried to come and usurp his valuable kingdom, which expanded a great distance of land. He had such military force that nobody could conquer. And he took care of his citizens in such a wonderful way. And when it came for the Jagannath Rath Yatra, the king actually revealed what was in his heart. I may be performing the duties of a king as the servant of everyone, but that's who I am. And he came out with a broom and was sweeping the street. Now, sometimes politicians sweep the streets to get votes. Yes, I've seen. But he didn't need votes because he's the king. No, there were no elections in those days. It was honestly from the core of his heart who he felt he was. The most insignificant of everybody in my kingdom, I am their servant. The birds, the insects, the cats and the dogs and the cows, what to speak of all varieties of humans, I am the servant. Why? Because they're all aham bija pratapita sarva yoni shukomteya murtaya samavantiya tasam brahma mahajoni raham bija pratapita. Because every living being is a child of my beloved. So that was the mood of King Prataparudra. And it was for real. He lived it. He spoke it. He breathed it. He was a servant of all. And therefore everybody loved him. And there was also a king named Yudhisthira who had those same qualities. And since I'm mentioning his name, I'll speak something on this subject. Pushyabhishek is the day of the Abhishek of Krishna on the full moon. It's in January. Now, this is a different thing. This is Pushpa Abhishek. We just happen to do it on the same month for reasons that could be explained later. But it's a flower festival where we unite for the purpose of bathing Krishna and then being bathed by the mercy of Krishna. And what's beautiful at this very moment, I'm looking out at this wonderful assembly and I see people of different nationalities, people of different religious backgrounds. I see multimillionaires, I see simple farmers, I see monks, and I see mothers, and I see so many different varieties of people. But everybody's just doing the same thing, plucking flowers. I see little tiny children, and I see great grandparents. And what are they doing? Plucking flowers. Anyone can pluck flowers. You don't need an education. You don't need a big bank account. You don't need a prestigious position in society. anyone can pluck a flower. And anyone, anywhere, can offer a flower petal to Krishna. And if it's offered with love and devotion, patram pushpam palam toyam yome bhakta prayachchati, Krishna accepts it. Krishna does not accept a thing. He accepts the sincerity of the love in which a thing is offered. That's all. Hanuman, he didn't really have any money. He just lived in a cave in Kishkindha Kshetra. Today it's called Hampi. Some of us have been there to look to see his caves. He didn't have any furniture. He didn't have very fancy clothes. Hardly wore any clothes. Ravana had a golden palace, a golden kingdom, the most beautiful jewels, the most wonderful everything. But he was envious. He was exploitative. And Hanuman was just an embodiment of devotion. And Ram embraced him, and Ram cried. He was conquered by Hanuman's love. And the oneness of bhakti is the one, the union of the oneness of that love. The dynamics of the person, the personalities who are sharing that love. So I'd like to speak briefly, at least that's my intention. About such a devotee. I was planning to speak this tonight, but actually I didn't make any plans for tonight either, so I might as well speak it now. But Krishna, for those of you who know Mahabharata, it's a very, very profound story. But Duryodhana was a very, very envious person. He was envious toward the Lord's devotees. And when we're envious toward each other, the Lord takes that very personally. So Duryodhana wanted to get Krishna's favor, and he prepared an incredible, wonderful feast and invited Krishna to it. Now this is in Hastinapur. Duryodhana was acting at that time as the emperor, along with his father, Dhritarashtra. He lived in the most magnificent palace anyone can imagine. And can you imagine what type of cooks he was hiring? The best cooks in the planet. Anywhere there was a good cook, he could just come and they would come. And he had the best cooks cook the best, freshest vegetables and grains and whatever else there was. It was a royal feast. And he had everything to be served on pure, solid gold plates and cups embedded with precious jewels. He had a wonderful throne arranged for Krishna in the most highly decorated, ornamented courtroom, meeting room. He had the most talented singers and dancers and poets and musicians and actors and actresses all ready to perform for Krishna. It's really an invitation. But his motivation was to get Krishna's favor so he could exploit others. It was selfish. So as all the royal bands and all the Brahmins chanting mantras and the feast was prepared and the actors and actresses and the musicians and everyone was assembled, it was a grand reception. Krishna was coming and he just walked by. He walked by the palace. Didn't even look in that direction. And he walked a little more. He may have crossed the river. And then he came to a little hut where a devotee named Vidura was living. And in that little hut, he never invited Krishna. He wasn't even expecting Krishna. Krishna just showed up. And it was so spontaneous that Vidura wasn't even home, according to the legend. Now, how would you like this, for God to come to your house and you're not even home? So he came to the hut and Vidurani is Vidura's wife. Vidura is Vidurani's husband. They both share the same love. So she's there and she's hardly even dressed. You know, she's just, you know, doing whatever she's doing, a regular day. And suddenly, on the little hut, she comes to the door. And there's the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the ultimate object of all prayers and of all love and of all religion and of all life. He's standing right there. And she's not even dressed properly. So she doesn't know what to say. She doesn't know what to do. She's all alone. This was too much. And then Krishna wanted to make it get even more exciting. Are you ready? What could be more uncomfortable than this for her? Ecstatically uncomfortable. Krishna says, I am hungry. And there was nothing in the house. Because they lived very simple lives. They would just go out and beg and bring some food home, and there was nothing there. And she was thinking, where's Vidura? I'm all alone. So there was no tables or chairs. She just, you know, put a little piece of straw on the floor and said, Krishna, please have a seat. And she wanted to feed Krishna, and she loved Krishna so much. All she had in the house were some bananas. So in great excitement, with tears of love in her eyes, wanting to make Krishna happy with these bananas, she peeled the bananas, and in her ecstasy, she threw the banana outside and gave Krishna the peel. And Krishna ate the peels, one peel after another. He's just, give me more. And she was peeling and peeling, and she was just in another world of love, and she just kept giving Krishna the peels, and Krishna kept eating them, and he was so happy. And suddenly Vidura, her husband, comes in, and he sees a pile of bananas laying there. Wondering, you know, he's coming in outside the door, there's all these bananas, and he's wondering, where's the peels? And then he comes in the house, and there he sees Vidurani giving the peels to Krishna, and Krishna just eating and eating. And he said, what are you doing?
And Krishna said to him, she's in ecstasy. Don't you see? There's no use talking to her. And then because he said that, she kind of came out of her trance and saw what she was doing. And she became very ashamed. And then she started giving Krishna bananas. And Krishna didn't want the bananas. He wanted the peels. Because of the emotion in which they were offered. So he walked by. He refused to accept the royal reception of Duryodhana with the most grand feast. And instead, he relished, he enjoyed, he had so much happiness going to a house where nobody was even there to receive him and eating some banana peels. Patram pushpam phalam toyam yome bhakta prayachchati. That Krishna accepts the love in which we offer. Of course, after she realized what she was doing, she started giving Krishna bananas. It's not that we should offer Krishna the least of what we have. If we're offering with love, we will offer the best of who we are. Whatever our abilities, whatever our intelligence, whatever our resources, whatever our skills, we should offer the best because that's love. But Krishna is not concerned with the quantity. Krishna accepts the quality of the sincerity of our intent. So I don't see anybody else plucking flowers. So that's my signal to end the class. At least, I think like that. But here we are, we're all plucking little flowers, and tonight, when the Abhishek takes place, you will see thousands and thousands and thousands of flower shower. And what's beautiful about it, we'll talk about this tonight, is you won't recognize which flower was yours. No one will be able to say, that flower petal I plucked. And I even remember the flower I plucked it from, and I remember what the Swami was talking when I plucked it, and I remember what the person next to me was saying when I plucked it, and you won't be able to identify. Nothing is I and mine. We're all individually plucking one flower at a time with our intent. But when it's offered, it's not I or you. It's ours. It's the accumulation of everyone. From all races, from all religions, from all sexes, from all social backgrounds, everyone's flowers are indistinguishably together, although they were all individually, personally plucked by individual fingers with individual hearts. But they're all together being offered. And this is Sankirtan. Sankirtan means all of us together, full, complete. We're all glorifying. We're all pleasing the Lord together. And when we have that mood, it becomes a festival of love. And we will witness that this evening.
Thank you very much.
Śrīla Prabhupāda ki jai, Śrī Rādhā Gopīnāth ki jai, Śrī Harinām Sankirtan ki jai, Ananti Koti Vaishnava Brinda ki jai.
RG Media YouTube channel. Like, share, subscribe.